Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, now just barely more than 2 weeks away from Election Day 2016. And we begin with the good martini, Chris Wallace, who, of course, hosted and moderated the final presidential debate last week, is also the host of Fox News Sunday. And one of his guests on Sunday was the campaign manager for Hillary Clinton, Robbie Mook. And Chris Wallace brought up the fact that one of the questions he asked Hillary Clinton on Wednesday night never really got answered. And that was how she could explain the certain appearance, if not more, of pay-to-play between the Clinton Foundation and the State Department, meaning donors to the Clinton Foundation got favorable treatment at the State Department. And Robbie Mook took it in a predictable and tired direction that Chris Wallace was not in the mood for.
These are stolen documents, stolen by the Russians. It's now confirmed from John Podesta. They are being put out.
Let me just speak to that, though, because, you know, the Trump tax returns were stolen as well when they were mailed to the New York Times. You guys didn't object to that. In fact, you jumped all over them.
Well, we don't know where those tax returns come from.
Well, they weren't. They were clearly stolen.
We don't know. And you'd have to work
with the New York Times on that. Had given them?
I don't know. I don't know how they got to the New York Times.
I guess what I'm saying is if we're looking at the fruits of that theft, and I will call it a theft, what's fair to look at the fruits of your theft?
I think what's particularly disturbing in this situation is that the intelligence community has now confirmed that that John Podesta's emails and the DNC emails were stolen by the Russians.
I know about the Russian connection. I'm talking about the $12 million from the King of Morocco.
And that was one of the most recent revelations, is that the King of Morocco paid about $12 million to get the Clintons to host their annual meeting in that country. Mook made a big point out of the fact that Hillary didn't actually go, but Bill and Chelsea did. And here's how that part of the conversation wrapped up.
This is the discussion the Russians want us to be having. They stole this information. They're selectively leaking. I can't even verify any of the information that you have there. We simply don't have enough time as a campaign to
sort through all these documents. If these were not true, you'd tell us.
If these were not true, you'd tell us. Great job by Chris Wallace. He makes it look so easy when it's obvious from other hosts and other moderators of debates that it's not. And Robbie Mook can only play the Russia card. Well done, and greatly exposed there.
We were about 10 seconds away from Chris Wallace saying, "Cut the crap, Mook." And all of his points there. First of all, I mean, Robbie Mook, he's like, I can't tell you if these emails are real. Robbie Mook, your name is on these emails. Like, you know, at least I'd say 20-25% of them, Mook is on these email chains. He knows whether they're not true or not. Secondly, I could be wrong. We haven't gone through every last one of them. But, Greg, it's worth noting, like, if the Russians had put in some bit of disinformation, some bit of false information tucked in amongst all the true ones in order to really make things look bad for Hillary, Greg, picture her saying something like, I haven't felt that good since I pulled the trigger on Vince Foster, something like that. Something really bad, and it was false. They'd point to that, and they'd say, Hillary Clinton's definitely didn't send that email. Let's show you the email server, which has complete and hasn't deleted any emails. Oh, wait, can't. Oh, well. But in other words, you know, in so far, everything that's been in the WikiLeaks emails has checked out. There hasn't been anything that, you know, contradicts known facts or proven facts or anything like that. Finally, I think the comparison there is perfectly fair. And basically, Mook is left sputtering that, look, it's totally different when stuff is stolen from Donald Trump. It's perfectly okay because he's the bad guy, Chris, and we're the good guys. And it's only wrong if you steal from the good guys. Look, you know, there's a lot of speculation that somebody who may have also signed those tax returns, who may have been married to Trump at that time, sent the documents. And there's some question about whether you can get in trouble for releasing tax returns that you signed without your spouse's permission. But that's just one theory floating around out there about where they could have come from. But either way, Trump himself did not authorize the disclosure of those tax returns. I've kind of wondered, okay, are we doing something wrong if we write about or discuss what's in these emails? But once it's out there, right? And my decision to not write about, or, you know, if I avert my eyes, it doesn't make what's in the emails any less true. And it doesn't mean the conversation's not going to happen otherwise. You know, from the perspective of our listeners and my readers, you know, you should know this stuff. It gives you a fuller, more complete picture. And yes, it's unfortunate for the DNC and for John Podesta and for the Hillary Clinton camp that these emails are being exposed and discussed and all these things they'd rather not have revealed are revealed, stuff like the deal with the Morocco or Donna Brazile, you know, perhaps giving the debate questions ahead of time to Hillary Clinton. But you know what? In that case, you should have invested in some serious cybersecurity. You know, this is being hoisted on your own petard here. And the idea that Hillary Clinton could complain about other people not being careful with their emails just kind of strains credulity here. So kudos to Chris Wallace for really taking it to Robbie Mook. The double standard is ridiculous and egregious. And, you know, I just wish I wish Chris Wallace could interview everybody all the time.
Remember the reset button? I thought Hillary fixed our relationships with Russia. If she did such a great job, why do they hate us so much, Jim?
Yeah, I noticed that during the debate, Greg, that you know, we were talking about how Hillary would handle Russia as if it was this entirely theoretical scenario we need to imagine. No, she was secretary, and we all remember the reset button, and we remember scoffing at the reset button way back when. And I remember saying, you know, there was this definite perception. You saw it in places like, you know, Tom Friedman's column and all of the foreign policy elites, the eggheads, some would call them, say, well, you know, Condi Rice had been so, the Bush administration had been so cowboyish and so unilateral, and they'd unnecessarily antagonized Moscow. And if we had just been nicer to them, we could have had cooperation with, you know, with Russia. Well, I think the last 8 years have proven it's, you know, this is not an issue of Bush not being nice enough or Condi Rice not being, you know, conciliatory enough or anything like that. This is in the character and the nature of the Russian regime. And it's been very clear for a long time to everybody. The guy who probably laid it out clearest was Mitt Romney, and Barack Obama in 2012 in that debate issued this, you know, oh, you know, the 80s call, they want their foreign policy back, you know, cue laugh track zinger. And that was the most wrong zinger in American political history, arguably, because now, you know, we were on, you know, metaphorical DEFCON 1 with the Russians. But I point out, Greg, that what did it take to get the Democrats to really see Russia as a threat? You know, start doing things that could support a Republican.
That's always the bottom line for them, it seems. All right, on to the bad martini and on to the pages of the Wall Street Journal. Quote, the political organization of Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe, an influential Democrat with longstanding ties to Bill and Hillary Clinton, gave nearly $500,000 to the election campaign of the wife of an official at the Federal Bureau of Investigation, who later helped oversee the investigation into Mrs. Clinton's email use. Campaign finance records show Mr. McAuliffe's Political Action Committee donated $467,500 to the 2015 State Senate campaign of Dr. Jill McCabe, who is married to Andrew McCabe, now the deputy director of the FBI. The Virginia Democratic Party, over which Mr. McAuliffe exerts considerable control, donated an additional $207,788 worth of support to Dr. McCabe's campaign in the form of mailers, according to the records. That adds up to slightly more than $675,000 to her candidacy from entities either directly under Mr. McAuliffe's control or strongly influenced by him. The figure represents more than a third of all the campaign funds Dr. McCabe raised in the effort. She got the third most amount of money out of any races in that 2015 cycle in Virginia. Oh, by the way, she lost. The only explanation coming is that Terry McAuliffe just thought she'd be a really good state senator. And she says that her husband, since he worked for the FBI, had no official role in the campaign. So, Jim, I'm sure there's nothing weird going on here.
Yeah, I mean, no two ways about it. He should have recused himself. There's no – I'm struck by this, Greg. Do you think everybody at the FBI has a spouse who works in politics? I mean, I'm guessing it can't be everybody. There's got to be somebody out there whose spouse works, you know, as a teacher or a scientist or in the private sector somewhere. Or maybe they stay at home mom. You know, who knows? Maybe a stay at home dad. But, you know, somebody whose spouse is not directly tied to partisan politics. Do we know for certain that this large amount of money was given by McAuliffe to this state senatorial campaign in order to influence the FBI investigation? No, we don't. But it emits an odor. I mean, if you're the FBI, you're supposed to avoid even the appearance of impropriety. And in this case, having somebody who's overseeing the FBI probe, which comes to this very unusual decision. And, you know, by the way, like one of the interesting things here is we've kind of pinned this on Comey, the FBI director, as being the guy who overruled the career agents and prosecutors and everybody underneath them. It's kind of interesting we're having this other figure come in here. I don't know if this was the clear factor or the decisive factor. I'm just going to point out that if the FBI has basically set fire to the public trust this year, this is one more example of it. And you can't, you know, if you have a spouse who is in partisan politics, you cannot investigate political corruption claims. Because whatever decision you reach, right, people are going to say, oh, it's because of the spouse. That's what it is. Maybe it's a fair accusation. Maybe it's not. If you have somebody who doesn't have that connection making that decision, you know, judges recuse themselves all the time. Prosecutors recuse themselves. If you're on a jury and you know one of the defendants, so, you know, the prosecutor, you're not supposed to be on this. The entire process is supposed to be free from bias, free from somebody putting their thumb on the scale. And things like this really do undermine the public trust. So this is a deeply dispiriting martini today, Greg.
Jim, I've always been kind of two minds when it comes to term limits. On the one hand, you like to clean out the dead and corrupt wood. On the other hand, it should be up to the voters to do the work and not just kick people out. So I'm a little bit torn on that. But how excited are you that Terry McAuliffe can't run next year?
Unless he's found being governor too much work. He's found it really frustrating. And I just want to go back to being a professional fundraiser. It's what I'm really good at. We said he was a sleaze back then. We said he was throwing around money. Like it's water. He'd always been in a blurred line between his business interests and his political interests. And it was like 2 or 3 weeks after he was elected, maybe it was a couple months after he was elected, he started like hosting events at the governor's mansion for donors and basically giving them special gifts and special access and things like that. And the Washington Post said, oh, my goodness, this is terrible. Who could have foreseen this coming? You could have, Washington Post. You actually did some great reporting on this. And some of us have been banging the alarm from the very beginning. You know, visa for sale scheme, as Virginia officials had said regarding his EB-5 visa program. Like, we all talked about this. We were all so clear about this. But there we go. So that's, we shouldn't be surprised by this. I don't think this is the decisive factor in this. I think, you know, if you look at the totality of things, I think Comey was terrified of the FBI being seen as being political in a election year of off recommending an indictment of the Democratic nominee 2 or 3 weeks before the Democratic election. And he felt like if I publicly criticize her, but I don't indict her, that's close enough. That's splitting the baby and everything will turn out fine. And pretty obviously it has not. And as we looked at the notes from the FBI agents, there are like 7 or 8 different ways you could have argued either obstruction of justice or lying to investigators or things like that. And deeply frustrating. I guess America knows what it's likely to get come November 8th. We'll see how the election year turns out. But the Clintons and McAuliffe are certainly finding ways to live down to their reputations in these final weeks.
Jim, do you think it'll help me build any street cred with the millennials that that we always speak so highly of if I say that Terry McAuliffe's lines are blurred worse than Robin Thicke's?
Very good. I prefer to think of they're blurred more than the red line in Syria.
Very, very good. All right. Jim, on to the crazy martini. And before we start this one, Jim, have you ever done any writing or work about government waste?
The Weed Agency, available from Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and fine booksellers everywhere. Yes, as a matter of fact, I have.
It's called The Weed Agency. So pick that up if you haven't already. It's been out for a number of years now, so you're behind the eight ball if you haven't read it yet. But government waste is definitely a problem. There are a lot of different places we could cut government waste, but guess where the government's looking to cut additional spending that apparently should not have been done? The Pentagon is trying to crack down on veterans who were, quote-unquote, improperly paid bonuses during the 9/11 recruitment drive after the terrorist attacks. Here's the Fox News story. The Pentagon is seeking to recover decade-old reenlistment bonuses paid to thousands of California Army National Guard soldiers to go fight in Iraq and Afghanistan, the Los Angeles Times reported Saturday. The paper reported that nearly 10,000 soldiers, many of whom risked their lives during multiple combat tours, have been ordered to repay the cash bonuses after audits revealed widespread overpayments by California Guard officials under pressure to meet enlistment targets at the height of the wars 10 years ago. But soldiers say the military is reneging on old agreements and imposing severe financial hardship on those whose only mistake was to accept the bonuses. Jim, I'm all for making sure the books add up and for making sure that the government is as streamlined as possible. But of all the bloat that exists out there, this is where the government decides to crack down?
Yeah, it's really ridiculous. You know, you want to say to these guys, yeah, keep it.
Right.
You know, you put your neck out for us, you risk your life in combat. You know, we'll find the money somewhere else. Check behind the couch cushions. Because considering the, you know, the epic levels of government waste, whether we're talking about payments that are made inappropriately, you know, overpayments on Social Security, Medicaid, Medicare, overpayments in federal contracting, you know, people who are apparently there's someone at the Chemical Safety Board, which is a U.S. federal agency. I just looked up. I'm trying to find my best example of government waste just recently. So there's a guy who was accused of creating a toxic work environment, retaliating against whistleblowers, 10 charges of misconduct against this manager, and he was placed on leave in June 2015. But he's still on the payroll, earning $158,000 because the action was never finalized by the board. So the guy's basically been paid for about, we're coming up now beyond a year. We're coming up probably about a year and 3 months, and not having to go to work and still getting paid. So let me take, you know, take the money from that guy and give that to the veterans and let them keep their stuff because it's kind of ridiculous. So, yeah, now they're going after these guys. So, you know, now this is the one bit of government waste they decided to go after. So typically infuriating of the federal government. This is the sort of thing that generates real serious, legitimate anger at the federal government. And one of the things that's you know, back during the Bush years, I used to hear from the folks at Daily Coast and liberal blogs like that, that conservatives so hate government that they're not committed to making it work. They don't care whether it works or not. And that's why you had Hurricane Katrina and all these cases of government waste and things under the Bush administration. Okay, fine. Barack Obama and the Democrats around him love government, right? They believe in government. They have total faith in government. As a result of that, they never hold anybody accountable. That's why you have things like the OPM hack. You have all these cases of egregious waste, the GSA blowing those fancy conferences in Vegas and one thing and another. They constantly believe in it. They're never willing to crack the whip and really get angry at people when they waste taxpayer money. So given a choice, I think it's time for the pendulum to swing back in the rightward direction. Give me the incompetent Republican managers who don't want to spend enough money, as opposed to the incompetent Democratic managers who want to spend too much money, but somehow claw the money back from veterans who've, you know, stuck their necks on the line for America.
Absolutely disgraceful. Jim, have a good day. We'll do this again tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And please tune in again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.